been a bit of a pain.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Let's just say some of the nation's largest banks have had some tightness in the chest lately. Not full-fledged heart attacks, but some serious symptoms nonetheless. Symptoms that have helped fuel the global economic fallout. So Uncle Sam has been ordering stress tests to make sure they don't need surgery. And executives from 19 of those banks will hear today just how sick they may or may not be. The latest from Mitchell Hartman.
The exams are confidential, and Treasury officials say no one will fail, but banks that get a low pass may have to explain how they'll boost their balance sheets. Paul Miller is managing director at FBR Capital Markets.
Anybody who is perceived to have to raise capital, the market will look at those companies saying those companies failed the stress test.
Miller says those banks will come under significant pressure to disclose more about their finances to offset investor fears. Bill Brown teaches law at Duke. He used to be a managing director at Morgan Stanley. He says Treasury isn't likely to force troubled banks to open their books entirely and expose themselves to the world.
The banks have tried to keep the kimono closed totally, and at this point, the government's focused on opening up just a little bit. But again, we're not going to see everything under the kimono.
Congress may have different ideas. Lawmakers may insist on full and frank disclosure from those banks that ask for more taxpayer money. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Finance ministers from around the world are in our nation's capital today. They're kicking off a weekend of global economic talks. First, meetings of the nation's world's seven largest economies, then the 20 biggest economies as well. The International Monetary Fund and World Bank have their spring meetings starting tomorrow in Washington as well. The World Bank meeting is on the heels of its announcing a $45 billion boost for infrastructure in the developing world. They are particularly vulnerable in this global crisis, according to its president, Robert Zoellick. Stocks, well, the Dow yesterday added 70 points, almost 1%. It closed at 79.57. The NASDAQ gained about 0.3%, and the S&P 500 rose more than 0.5%. Asian markets closed mixed today. European shares are up at this hour, more than 1%. In California, air regulators yesterday adopted a mandate requiring low-carbon fuels. It's the first state in the nation to do that officially. And it's part of California's wider effort to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The standards are expected to create a new market for alternative fuels. There's already a market for new ways to make energy, and a lot of it is out of this world. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, here's Jennifer Collins.
California law requires utility companies to get a fifth of their electricity from renewable sources by 2012. So Pacific Gas and Electric has come up with one project that's pretty far out. Spokesman Jonathan Marshall.
To send satellites up into space with huge solar panels, gather the energy, and then send it back to Earth via radio waves.
Basically, they'd beam solar energy back to Earth and then feed it into PG&E's grid. Sounds kind of like a movie that's coming out in a few weeks. The plan is to have those spacey solar panels orbiting the Earth within 7 years. They generate enough electricity to power 240,000 homes. Monique Hannis is with the Solar Energy Industries Association. She says the satellite project could make solar power more expensive and...
We feel that there's so much that can be done right now to capture solar power right here on Earth.
PG&E says solar panels in space would provide much more electricity than the ones on Earth do. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Trusted Choice, over 10,000 independent insurance agencies across America committed to treating customers as people, not policies. Online at trustedchoice.com. And by Constant Contact, helping more than 250,000 small businesses and nonprofits succeed using email marketing. ConstantContact.com.
Spring is here, and that means more weddings. The average wedding in the United States costs somewhere around $28,000. But these days, many couples heading to the altar are scaling back. Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Here comes 2009's more frugal bride and groom. Lindsay Walschlager and her fiancé Justin Johnson had planned a reception at an art center in Red Wing, Minnesota. The cost? $3,000 even before the food. The more they thought about it,
Why should we mortgage our future on one day, given the uncertainty of everything?
Instead, they opted for something simpler.
And our favorite campground in the world is in Lake City, Minnesota, and it's right on the shores of Lake Pepin, and it's just gorgeous.
And the covered dining hall overlooking the lake is pretty cheap.
I talked to the campground, and I can rent that for $200, and it already has the tables, it already has chairs, it already has tablecloths.
Lindsay's parents are sharing the cost, but her mother works at a company that's seen several rounds of layoffs lately. That's making everyone more worried about money, and it's prompted Lindsay to downsize the wedding. Millie Martini-Bratton is editor of Brides magazine. She says the recession gives couples a perfect opportunity. They can focus on what they really want in a wedding, and that extends to the guest list.
Right now, it's a little easier to tell people, gee, I'd love to have you come, but I really am on a tight budget, because in reality, everybody is.
Bratton says businesses from venues to florists are ready to negotiate. Brandon Powers is a photographer in southern Georgia. Couples started haggling with him over his package deals earlier this year, so he introduced a la carte pricing.
And I haven't seen, you know, a big change in how much people are spending. They're not necessarily spending less. They just want to make sure that what they're spending their money on are the things that they absolutely want.
He says he's working a lot more do-it-yourself weddings.
Clients and friends and family members of the clients are taking on more of the responsibilities that were done by professionals in the past.
He's seeing fewer videographers, fewer bands, and more iPods. That's all fine with bride-to-be Lindsay Walschlager.
You know, at the end of the day, a wedding is about bringing two families together and celebrating it with the people that you're closest to, and it doesn't need to be more than that.
Even if her future in-laws are still getting used to the idea of a reception at a campsite. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Hope you can join us at our website. We have the Scratch Pad with our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow, inside marketplace.org in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for being with us. Have a great Friday and a very nice weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.